The following is a lecture on the appearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on February 8, 2015, in Austin, Texas, USA.
Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Padakamala Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupa Sangra Jata Sahagana Raghunatandita Tams Jiva Sadvaita Zavaduta Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakonvitamscha Namaom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatavine Namaom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Tinamine. So, today is the most auspicious appearance day of His Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, who is the Param Guru of myself and the great grand spiritual master of the Prabhupada's grand disciples. He is the great grand spiritual master. He is not an ordinary person. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was feeling some great difficulty to carry out the mission. He needed help. The mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he prayed to Krishna that you give me someone from your personal stock. So in answer to this prayer, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur appeared in this world. When he was born, it was quite unusual. His umbilical cord came across his shoulder like a Brahmin's thread when he was born. Very auspicious. And at that time, his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was magistrate, which is in the Indian society in those days during British rule, the highest position an Indian can get was to be a magistrate. So he was the highest position of an Indian he was the magistrate in Jagannath Puri, and he was in charge of the Jagannath temple also. So that gave him some special privileges. When the Ratha Yatra is there, the cart would come and stop in front of the house for his own personal darshan, private darshan. So the child had just been born. Then a mother, she brought the little baby up on the Ratha Yatra cart before Jagannath. And as soon as She arrived there. Immediately the garland fell from Lord Jagannath onto the little baby, you see. Immediately fell right onto the little baby. So he is very special. He is called Gaura Shakti. He is the energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gaura Shakti. He's fully empowered with the Shakti of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he remained strict brahmachari throughout his entire life. He was very highly learned. Even in earlier in his life, he was very highly learned in astrology. He got the title Sarasvati because he was a very learned astrologer. But he put his interest fully to devotional service and began the preaching, Gaudiya Math. A very successful program all over India. He was a very, very powerful preacher. He was known as Singha Guru, Lion. He saw a Mayavadi, he would blast him. He was so heavy that he was walking down the street. A Mayavadi was coming, he'd crawl across the street so he wouldn't meet him. He was very heavy, blasting the Mayavadi. Smashing Mayavadi. It was so heavy, there was a plot to have him assassinated. The people went to the police and they said, we want to give you some money, we're going to kill somebody, just don't mind, here's a bribe, you see. They said, they found out it was the sadhus. Oh, we will accept, but not for sadhus. For ordinary people, yes, no problem, you can give bribe, you can kill them. We have no problem, but for a sadhu, no, we will never do for a sadhu. So he was a very heavy preacher, very strong preacher. So the story is very nice, actually. He was becoming very successful, and he was there in his headquarters, Mayapur. And sometimes he would come, there was one center. Actually, ISKCON has gotten that property back, Ki Jai. Uttadanga, the place where Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta, ISKCON bought it. We have it. It's a place of pilgrimage when you go to Calcutta. I don't know if it's ready yet. They got it all fixed up and ready, but either now or in the very near future, we can go there and actually sit in that room and see where Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada first met. Wow. That'll be really something, huh, Kirtan? That'll be really something. So, actually at that time, our Srila Prabhupada, he was a young lad in early 20s, maybe age 22, something, 22, yeah. Very young man, but his father knew Dr. Bose's laboratories. It was the first allopathic medicine introduced in India. It was a very big business, allopathic medicine introduced in India. Bose's laboratories. So he got Abhay Chadan Day, his son, a position as the manager. Just imagine coming into a company with all these people and working there, all these older people, a whole thing. You bring a young 20-year-old, a young kid in his early 20s to be the manager of this chemical factory, and that's the position he got. He was the manager of a chemical factory. Actually, Prabhupada was a very, very powerful manager, very powerful. Even amongst his friends, they would do whatever he would say. Even they read his palm. He said, "Your palm speaks that your order will always be followed." The palmist just said. So amongst his friends, he was the authority. Whatever Abhay Charan says, that's it. He's the authority. So one of his friends, Narendranath Malak, he had heard this sadhu from Mayapur. Oh, this is really a wonderful sadhu. We got to get Abhay Charan to come and hear him. So he'll say, yes, he's a good sadhu. So everyone should go hear him. So Narendranath Malik came over to his office and said, you got to come hear this sadhu. The sadhu has come from Mayapur. You have to come hear this sadhu, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. He said, no. I've seen this. See, his father was a very pure devotee, but very simple also. Every night he would feed the sadhus in the home. Every night inviting sadhus. Some of them were not really real sadhus. They were these professional beggars who would dress in saffron. They were the really sadhus, you know, cheater sadhus. But he was very simple. He invited everyone. So Prabhupada had seen all these cheater sadhus and coming into the house. He said, "Oh yes, I know these sadhus." He said, no, thank you. But Narendranath Mal insisted, "No, you must come." Prabhupada said, "Practically, he dragged me." He practically dragged me. So yeah, Prabhupada went and to that house there, up on the rooftop at Uttadanga. And who was there but Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakura? And as soon as he walks in the door, just imagine if a guest walks in the door, you see, and I say, "You should dedicate your life for making the whole world Krishna conscious." Some guest walks in and they get an order like that. That was Bhakti Siddhanta. He ordered him, "You should dedicate your life for giving Krishna consciousness to the English speaking world." So what's his response? He argued. "But who will hear our message? We are a dependent nation." So Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, he smashed his arguments. Boom, boom, boom. And Bhai Chaim was so happy. "Oh, I have met such a great saintly teacher. Oh, such a great saintly spiritual master." Actually, when his Prabhupada said, "Practically he initiated me." He accepted him immediately as his spiritual master. "Somehow I have to do this." That was in 1922. Now, Prabhupada said, "Actually, I should have immediately joined. But Maya is there," Prabhupada said. "That Maya is there. I just got married. I had a 1-year-old child. Maya is there." So Prabhupada took to his household activities. Actually, he was working as a manager of the factory, but he was not so satisfied just being, you know, it's like being a highly placed employee. He really had an entrepreneurial drive. He wanted to have his own business. So he made a deal to be the sole distributor of Bose's medicines in northern India. He made a deal, cut a business deal with Dr. Bose. He said, "All right." He let him go out to start his own business. He had a retail shop, Payag Pharmacy in Allahabad. And he did a wholesale business, traveling all over to pharmacies all over India. Big, big wholesale business. So, the Gaudiya Math was not in Allahabad. It was based in Calcutta. So, for so many years he was away. But he was always thinking, "Oh, I have met such a great saintly teacher." And so, in 1933, guess who shows up in Allahabad? The Gaudiya Math. And Prabhupada is so happy. Although his father, but they were the Ramakrishna mission. They're no good. That is Ramakrishna mission. Ramakrishna mission is some bogus organization. It says that this so-called sadhu is actually God himself. Some bogus thing called Ramakrishna mission. Very famous in India. So, Swami Vivekananda, it's his bogus Mayavadi garbage. They say, yatamat tatapat. Whatever path you want to follow, it's all the same. Just like I was in Cincinnati yesterday, and when Mr. Srinivas, he came up after the lecture to argue with me. That, you know, this is true for you, and, you know, something else is true for someone. It's not really absolutely true, Krishna consciousness. For you, it's true. But for someone else, no. It's the same philosophy as the Ramakrishna mission. Yatamat tatapat. As many paths, as many opinions. So, what is the actual reality? What he's really saying is, truth is relative, it's not absolute. There's no such thing as absolute truth. What you feel is true for you, it's true for you. If you think apples are purple, and that's your apples are white, and that's true for you. Apples are white. If you think apples are black, then for you, apples are black. They are. Because you think they're black, for you, this is the idea, you see. As many paths, as many opinions. But the fact is this. Is truth, we have to ask, is truth absolute? So you're saying, you can add, I didn't think of it at the time, I have to admit, but I thought of it later on. Sometimes it happens. You're in the middle of an intense situation, somebody's challenging you, and you don't have the right argument at that moment. Then later on you realize, well, next time I got it. I got the argument for next time. The next time is, oh, so Mr. Srinivas, you consider then that truth is relative? Oh, yes. Are you absolutely sure? Then I got him. Then I've got him, you see. So this is the mood of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, defeat all opposing arguments. If you want to be a true Bhakti Siddhanta Anuga, which we're supposed to be, as his grandchildren and great-grandchildren, we're supposed to be true Bhakti Siddhanta Anugas, followers in his footsteps, then you should be very expert at defeating opposing arguments, very, very expert at smashing all opposing arguments. So anyway, his father wasn't very happy. He thought they were the Ramakrishna mission with this bogus philosophy that truth is relative. But Prabhupada was very, very happy. He helped them to begin their mission there in Allahabad. And then around that time, the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he came for Brajmandal Parikrama. This is very nice. Actually, many years ago we did this. I don't know if they're still doing, but probably they still. It's very nice. You go and you camp. You go around Brajmandal for many days. Every night you camp out in a different place. I know we did it in Navadvipa also. It's very nice. They had tents, and they bring the prasadam in. They cook the prasadam at the temple, and they bring it in trucks. And they have tents, and every day you go walking on pilgrimage from one place to another, and every night there's the tents are there. You get to the new place, the tents are there waiting, and the prasadam is waiting. It's very nice. Vrajmandal Parikram, Navadvipa Parikram. So they were doing this Brajmandal Parikrama. So he, Prabhupada, went, and every night there'd be lecture. But Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur speaks in very erudite English. This materialistic demeanor cannot possibly stretch to the transcendental autocrat. You see, it's ever inviting the fallen conditioned souls to us. And that's some of the more simple English. He speaks in very, you look in his writings, it's very, just like there's one called, I think it's called Ontology and Morphology, for example. One essay, Ontology and Morphology. What? Talks in very big, he was speaking to the highest level of intellectual scholars, even though they're all villagers. And so most of them would just go for darshan, even though they wouldn't come for the lecture. You see, they would skip the lecture. We don't skip the lecture, do we? We don't skip the lecture. Because we understand the importance of the lecture. Hearing the lecture actually purifies the heart. It elevates the consciousness. It brings one to the transcendental plane. It's a very important thing, hearing the lecture. So Prabhupada understood. I would understand, I would not understand, but still I would go on hearing. There would be only a few sannyasis there and one householder from Allahabad named Abhai Charanday be sitting there. I would understand, or I would not understand, but still I would go on hearing. One who is very keen to hear. Let's see. One who is very keen to hear. You understand this point over here? One who is very keen to hear. You kindly practice this. Be very eager to hear. Okay? One who is very keen to hear, he can speak very nicely in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, because I heard nicely, therefore I can speak nicely. So in this way, and then they recommended, just like in ISKCON, the local authority recommends to the spiritual master, this so-and-so is ready for initiation, we'd like to recommend so-and-so for initiation. So they recommended, "Oh, Guru Maharaj, we'd like to recommend this Abhaycharan Day for initiation." "Oh, yes. The others go away, but he hears. Therefore, yes, I will accept him as my disciple." You see? So he was noted. He didn't know he was being noticed, but actually he's being noted by Bhaktisiddhanta. This one hears. The others go, but this one sits and he hears, you see. So we can take note. If you want to become qualified to realize Krishna consciousness, be very eager. If you think Krishna consciousness isn't worth a dime, then you wouldn't want to hear it, right? But it's worth unlimited millions of dollars beyond that. It's the perfection of our existence to become Krishna conscious. So whenever there is Krishna Katha going on, spoken according to the parampara, not some bogus concocted Krishna Katha, so-called. But whatever the bona fide Krishna Katha is being spoken, we should be very, very eager to hear. And see that we can learn this. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati will notice, oh, he's not dead and gone, Prabhupada. It is not that he is dead and gone. You see, he will notice. Oh, Prabhupada will notice. Your spiritual master will also notice. This one is very eager to hear. You see. So, in this way, he got initiated in 1933. And Prabhupada hardly associated with all. Sometimes people say, "Well, I don't get so much association with my guru and ISKCON. It's not a very good situation. I need more." But Prabhupada only... Prabhupada said, "Not more than 10 times I was with my spiritual master. Maybe not even 10 times. Not more than 10 times I was actually with him." But when he was, it was very powerful. He was one time, he met him at Radhakunda, the sacred banks of Radhakunda. And the two of them just talking. And very confidentially, because they had gotten a temple in Calcutta, very beautiful marble temple. But all the devotees who had been very austere preachers, now they're fighting over who will occupy which room in the temple, you see. They became materialistic. So Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta very consciously said, "There will be fire in the mat. There will be fire in his movement." He warned him that the thing's going to really get bad. And then he said, "But if you ever get money, print books." So Prabhupada took that very seriously. He had learned everything from his father. His father, Gaur Mahadev, was a pure devotee. He learned everything about Krishna consciousness from his father, except for this one thing, printing books. That he learned from Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. "If you ever get money, print books." So he took that order very seriously. Of course, he didn't have any means at that time. But he took these orders very deeply into his heart. Very, very deeply into his heart. That I must print books in the future somehow. He didn't have no idea how he would do these things. But he said, somehow I must do these things. I have to spread Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. I have to print books. He was meditating on these orders, even though he had no idea how he would carry it out. No idea. And then he was feeling a little bad because there was all these brahmacharis and sannyasis. They were there in the ashram, you know, associating every day with Guru Maharaj. He's a house sorter out there doing his business, you know, going around selling, getting his customers in all the retail pharmacies for his wholesale business. He even had a chemical factory. He became very developed. Prabhupada said he thought he'd become a millionaire. That's how successful his business has become. He had his own factory, his own chemical factory. So he was not getting very, very little opportunity to ever see Guru Maharaj or speak with him or hear him. Very little. There was no internet in those days. Now we have people listening on the internet from many different countries. There was no internet. There was no, you know, MP3s, no cassettes, no reel-to-reel tape recorders, no 33 and a third. I mean, you know, if you don't hear him, you don't hear him. But you just have to remember the thing that you once heard 20 years ago. It was whatever you hear, you have to hold that in your heart because that's all you got. You can't, you know, tune into the internet and download a few lectures. It wasn't like that. So whatever you heard, that is always kept very dear in your heart. Those words are just the greatest treasure. My spiritual master told me this. But he was wondering, here I am, you know, out here doing this, my business, taking care of my family. What does Guru Maharaj want me to do? Once you take initiation of a spiritual master, your only duty is to serve him and please him. That's your only duty. You have no other business except to please your Guru Maharaj. That's your only business. When you preach, and you, as Prabhupada explains in one lecture, when you preach, you don't think, oh yes, now I can have some followers. No. Whoever you preach to, you bring them, Prabhupada says, you bring them to your spiritual master. That's the etiquette. Prabhupada explains. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada was wondering, what can I do? So, in December 1936, at that time, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati became indisposed. He became very ill. So Prabhupada wrote him a letter just in the final days before he left the world in 1936. He said, how can I serve you? See, if you have one question of your spiritual master, that is the one question. How can I serve you? Because that's the only question they ever asked. How can I serve you? That's the one question. If you have only one question, ask that one. How can I serve you? So he said, spread Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. The same exact order he got at Ultadanga. The same thing. Reconfirm. Spread Krishna. And then Bhaktisiddhanta left the room. And sure enough, the Gaudiya Math, there was fire in the Math. There was so much fighting. There was different camps and break up. They would sell the printing press to cover legal fees to see who will control the movement. That's how far deviated they became. So Srila Prabhupada tried to work within the Gaudiya Math to print books. But he got he was living in one of the ashrams. He had retired from household life. His wife said she actually sold, he'd written a Bhagavad Gita manuscript for publishing. His wife traded it for tea biscuits. Finally, he told her, she was very addicted to tea. She said, tea or me? She said, well, if it's tea, no, I have to give up my husband then. Didn't think it was serious. But it was serious. And Prabhupada gave up household life. Because the sons were there, they had income. The mother could be. She had several sons, they were all well, you know, employed. So Prabhupada's now living as a vanaprastha outside of family then. Certainly, I forget the chronology, and of course, he took sannyas also, his godbrother. From his godbrother. He said, Bhaktisiddhanta, he was dreaming. Bhaktisiddhanta was calling, you come and join me, you come. He was calling. Prabhupada said, he was thinking, oh, I have to give up my householder life? Horrible. He was horrified, Prabhupada. I was horrified, the idea of giving up householder life. Guru Maharaj is calling. He's calling me. He was horrified. But actually, he didn't. So anyway, before or after the sannyas order, I don't know the chronology, but he was staying in one of the ashrams at the Gaudiya Math. And he was very senior. They respected him. He was giving classes. And he was organizing book publication. So anyway, but he got like a pink slip. Very politely said, you know, very politely he got a, you know, go. They worded it very tactfully, but basically tell him, go, we don't want you here. So he tried to work within the Gaudiya Math, and it didn't work out. So he had that order from his Guru Maharaj to spread to the English world. So he started publishing Back to Godhead magazine. Actually, in 1944, he started Back to Godhead magazine. And you can look, if you have the Vedabase, you get to read all those old issues. Everyone should get the Vedabase. You can read all the old Back to Godhead. There's one, Truth and Beauty, about that liquid beauty. The girl who, you know, took all the purgatives and laxatives for a whole week. And some lover, prospective lover, came and wanted to get together with her. She said, come back in 1 week and then I will give you all of my beauty. So for a whole week she was passing stool and urine, stool and vomit, I mean to say, and keeping it in one urn. And when he came back, he didn't recognize her. He said, where's that beautiful young girl? I am she. You are she? Yes. Where is your beauty? I have separated it. Would you like it? Come. And there was a big pile. So Prabhupada tells that story in the early Back to Godhead magazine. So I recommend, it's recommended reading. Get the Vedabase and go back. Actually, you can get it on a CD disc as well. You can order the CD of all the Back to Godhead, going all the way back. You get on a CD as well if you don't want to get the Vedabase. So anyway, he was publishing Back to Godhead magazine, and sometimes with great austerity. When he even got gored by a bull one time in Delhi in the heat. He went through all great austerities. Great austerities to serve his spiritual master. This is disciple. They will take all austerities. Whatever I have to do, it doesn't matter. Whatever I have to do to please my spiritual master, I will do it. So he was taking all of the austerities. Actually, he tried to do his business and preach at the same time. He tried to do that. He started in Jhansi, the League of Devotees. He even got the use of a whole property. But then there was somebody who wanted to use that property. It was like a women's lib, you know, get all the women to train the women to do jobs or something like that. And they had some women's training institute. So all the women, instead of just being at home, they could learn how to do this and that. So they asked him to leave, get out. So he lost his whole headquarters in Jhansi for the League of Devotees. And his chemical factory had burned down. I think that's when he took sannyas, yeah, after that. All he walked away was with the deity of Krishna. He lost everything. He had initiated one disciple, Acharya Prabhakar. He gave him the name Acharya Prabhakar. But he was not very satisfied with that disciple. Prabhupada told one time, he said, he was my first disciple, he'll be my last disciple. He wasn't very satisfied with Acharya Prabhakar. So anyway, Prabhupada was trying to preach with the Back to Godhead magazine. But then some gentleman in Delhi said, a magazine they will throw away. Why don't you print books? They will keep that. They will treasure it more, it'll be more important. He said, yes. He took that advice very seriously, and he started to print books. The first canto of the Bhagavatam in 3 volumes. Prabhupada was so dedicated. At that time he was staying in Vrindavan. He also had a place in Delhi, in Chippewada area. You know that Chippewada area? He went and he had a place there where he, like an office where he could work out of, and he had a place in Vrindavan. He'd take the train back and forth. And he had the printer. Surrender Kumar Jain was the name of his printer. And Surrender Kumar was amazed. Prabhupada, he would go, instead of taking the rickshaw to come to the printing office, he would walk and he would fast. Instead of feeding himself, he would He would walk instead of taking the rickshaw, and he would fast and take that money for paper. And Surrender Kumar Jain felt so sorry. He would feed him the breakfast. He was seeing he's going hungry. He was giving up his own eating. Just imagine how dedicated he was to his spiritual master. He would not even eat to buy paper to print books. You see, that's how dedicated Prabhupada was, serving his Guru Maharaj. So we have to learn from that example of Prabhupada how to be dedicated to my spiritual master. We have to learn this order, this example, and this example, how to dedicate our life for pleasing our spiritual master. So in this way, he printed the books, and then he was struggling to... He had some invitation to go to Japan for some conference. He wrote a book called Light of the Bhagavad, which now you can read, that very nice book, Light of the Bhagavad. And that didn't work out. But then he got... He talked to Sumati Mararji from the Sindhya Steamship Company. He requested, "You please give me free passage to America." She said, "Swamiji, you're too old and it's very cold. You will die there." She would not do. But he begged her again. And she finally said, "All right." She gave him the passage. And it was very difficult. The captain said, because Swamiji was with us, it was much calmer sea than usual. But even then, it was difficult. Prabhupada had two heart attacks on the boat, if you can imagine. Suffered two heart attacks. And he said, "I thought if a third pain comes like that, I will leave my body." But then he had this dream, and Krishna was there coming to protect him. So he arrived in Boston Harbor. And that prayer you can read. He's written very nicely on his arrival in Boston Harbor. So we can see how dedicated he was to his spiritual master, and we can try to imbibe that mood ourselves. Now we're serving a different master. We're serving our senses, isn't it? We're serving our senses, our material senses. And our subtle sense, the false pride and the false ego, we're serving that instead. But where does that service take us? It's the pathway to hell. It simply takes us to hell. But if we learn how to actually serve Guru, you see, then our lives become perfect. Then we become blessed. Then we can become fully empowered for giving Krishna to others. And that is, I can tell you, there's nothing more satisfying than giving Krishna to someone else. As I have said many, many times, the more you give Krishna, the more you get Krishna. So how do you give Krishna? You have to have Krishna yourself. And the only way you will have Krishna is by complete dedication to your spiritual master. If you try to do your own thing, you are finished. You are nowhere. You have to completely dedicate yourself to your spiritual master. That is how to become successful in Krishna consciousness. We have to see the relationship between Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, and we have to do the same thing that Prabhupada did. Do the same thing. That's how we'll be successful. Otherwise, yatamat tatapat, wishy-washy, quasi-spiritual life, nowhere, and take another birth, another birth, another birth, another birth, until we get serious about Krishna consciousness. So, we have a few minutes left for questions.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Today is Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's appearance day.
Yes.
celebrating. Today is Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. You are talking about your spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, only. So could you explain that?
So why did I talk so much about Prabhupada? Because he's my connection with Bhakti Siddhanta.
I can understand that.
Huh?
I can understand that, but still.
That's how I'm connected. I never met Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, but I have met Srila Prabhupada. He is my connection. And by talking about his dedication to Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, that enables us to understand what is the position of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. How much Prabhupada was dedicated to him. We should study. Our duty on this day is to become very, very dedicated in our hearts to Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. So the more, by studying Prabhupada's dedication, we can learn how we can also be dedicated to his mission. To make the world Krishna conscious. That's the answer. Any questions more? Yes.
You mentioned Srila Prabhupada learned from his father Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he entertained Ramakrishna Paramahansa's.
He what?
Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa's mission people, the Swamis. From
what about the Ramakrishna mission?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, that's an interesting. It's I see your point. It's an interesting thing. It's very interesting. I could ask the same question. It's an interesting point you've raised, because Prabhupada said he learned everything from his spirit, from his father, about devotional service, but yet his father. Oh, wait a minute. Fully state your question. His father understood the Ramakrishna mission was bogus. So what's the point now?
So how could he entertain the Swamijis from?
How could he mistake them?
Yeah.
He was getting rather old at the time. He was very elderly at that time. Very, very old man at that time. Maybe that explains it. I can't say, but he was. I can say he was very, very old man at the time. Very, very, his heart, it could be, old age means hard of hearing, his eyes are bad, that could be the explanation. I'm sure his consciousness was still good, but we can only speculate. But Prabhupada said that about his, did tell us about that, his father. He thought it was the Ramakrishna mission. It's an interesting point. How could he, if he's a great devotee, how he could mistake them for Ramakrishna mission? It's an interesting question. I can only guess, because when you meet Prabhupada, you can ask him. Prabhupada can give you the authoritative answer. How a pure devotee could possibly mistake the Gaudiya Math preachers for being Ramakrishna mission? That's a very interesting question, yeah.
But it couldn't be anybody, because Guru Mahan never met with Gaudiya Math mission.
We've never heard that he actually personally contacted the Gaudiya mission, because Prabhupada met them and then they moved away. So yeah, it's interesting. Any questions from the internet? Okay, here we have Mathura Das from the United States of America. Heard of that country? Since the guru and disciple relationship is eternal, does the disciple assist the guru in the spiritual world, or can they become separated? Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam. Is it in every volume or just in the first one? I think it's just in the first one. The spiritual master lives forever by his instructions, and the disciple lives with him. So I'm sure that I'm going to be somehow or other be serving Prabhupada in the spiritual world also, not just here on this planet. That I couldn't serve my spiritual master in the spiritual world? That wouldn't be right. If that was the case, I want to stay in the material world eternally. If going back to Godhead, I can't serve Prabhupada, I don't want to go back to Godhead. I'll stay in the material world. You see? That's to be the mood of the disciple. I just want to serve my spiritual master. So surely there will be an opportunity to serve your spiritual master in the spiritual world. Otherwise, what dedicated disciple would want to go back to Godhead? He'd say, let me stay here in the material world forever and serve my Guru Maharaj's mission here. If I can't serve him in Golok, I don't want to go to Golok. That would be a dedicated disciple. Yes?
In regards to this question, it is said that we have two states when we are liberated. It's one is in Goloka Vrindavan and another in Goralila. So is this the option that we can serve Srila Prabhupada? Is it optional that we can only choose one, or we are both?
It's described that there, we actually see it in the cover of the first canon of the Bhagavatam. There's Goloka Vrindavan is there, and there's the Radha Krishna section and the Lord Chaitanya section in Goloka Vrindavan. And I recently read that according to your mood that you serve here in this world, you go either to Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual world or Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Or you can go to both. You could be a sannyasi and a gopi at the same time. That's interesting. People, all these transgender people, they can get excited about this. You can be a gopi and a sannyasi at the same time. It's possible. So I was thinking, well, then what's our mood in ISKCON? What is our mood here? Well, how did Prabhupada train us? We have Gorna time, we got Radha Krishna. Prabhupada trained us in both moods. So I would expect from that that actually, it would not be out of the question that the ISKCONers, the ISKCONites could be have dual identities in the spiritual world. And Prabhupada also. I wouldn't be surprised if Prabhupada is in Krishna's pastimes and Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And we're also associating with them in both. And you know something? The desire, this trees there are called kalpa viksha. They fulfill all desires. What if you had a desire that you wanted to be at 22nd Avenue and meet Prabhupada when he first came? Be back with Prabhupada at 22nd Avenue when the movement first started. What if you have a desire and the kalpa viksha tree is there and it goes, phew. It's interesting. So you could serve, your spiritual master can be in both leelas and you can be in both leelas. I can't wait to go back to Goloka Vrindavan. It's going to be really interesting. And all of you should become very eager and dedicated to becoming completely dedicated, surrendered souls of Guru to your spiritual master in Krishna. So you become qualified to go back when you leave your body. Not that you have to take birth and your spiritual master has to take birth again to save you. Don't put your spiritual master into difficulty by not taking this process seriously. You're forcing him to take birth again. You take this process seriously. So your spiritual master doesn't have to take birth again. Prabhupada taught us this principle. Ki jai. Okay, what else do we have here? That was a wonderful question. A nice question. Okay. Any questions from the internet crowd out there? Around the world? Let's see, here we go. Any questions from the locals? Yes.
I'm a little bit confused about how you're saying if I couldn't serve my spiritual master, I wouldn't want to go. And I was wondering, I thought in this material realm, we need a spiritual master to connect with Krishna, but when we go back to Godhead, Krishna is the focus. That's what I thought. Krishna is the focus.
So I climb up the ladder, the Guru Maharaj ladder, I get on the branch and I kick away the ladder.
No.
In the spiritual world, you will still be connected with your spiritual master. Actually, your connection with, even now, you have a direct connection with Krishna. What do you chant on your beads? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna is directly on your tongue. So, we have a direct relationship with Krishna and an indirect simultaneously. And the same thing will be in the spiritual world. You're directly connected with Krishna right now and indirectly simultaneously. And the same thing in the spiritual world. Not that you will only... I'm only interested in Krishna. I don't care about any other devotees. I just want to see Krishna. You wouldn't fit into the scene there. Everybody there is a big family, you know. Krishna is the center, but everyone, there's so many relationships. You can read in the Krishna book. Does Nanda Maharaj neglect Mother Jasoda? No. They have wonderful loving relationships, but it's all based on pleasing Krishna. You see? Cowherd boys, the cowherd girls, the cows, the calves, the butterflies, the peacocks, the flutes. They're all living entities. Everything is a living entity in the spiritual world. Even Krishna's dhoti is a devotee. Just imagine, you could be Krishna's dhoti. Next question. Yeah.
So I've heard many times that in Goloka Vrindavan, devotees, they don't even know that Krishna is God. They just love him just because
that's right.
Krishna.
That's absolutely true.
So if they don't know that Krishna is God, then like, and they have a spiritual master, so it's a little bit confusing to me to have a spiritual master and
you, not know. No, it may not be like here having a spiritual master, but you have to go there to find out. I mean, it's a whole different realm. But you had that dedication to your spiritual master will eternally be there, because you remember, you in the spiritual world, you remember how you got initiated here in this world and how you surrendered to your spiritual master's order. You will remember all of these things. Prabhupada says this in one letter. You remember who your spiritual master is, and you'll be eternally dedicated to him in your heart, and totally dedicated to doing whatever he says, whatever you can do to please him. That will always continue. But it's not that, you know, he will be in his svarup, you will be in your svarup, in Krishna's pastimes, in Lord Chaitanya's, and or Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Does that help a little bit?
No.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. No question there. Any other questions? Yes.
So, as you were talking about dedicating yourself to this movement, I'm talking about personally. Like, sometimes I feel like I should just give everything up and dedicate myself completely to this movement. And then sometimes I'm like,
here's the thing. Just follow the instructions that we give you. That's all. And that's your dedication. You can bring your desires to us and we'll just talk about it and we'll tell you what to do. We should follow higher authority. Just like some devotees, Prabhupada encouraged people to stay in school. And many, like our Trivika Maharaj, he finished his college degree. Rabindra Sarup, he was studying, he was working on a PhD. The devotee said, just give it up and go out on book distribution. Do some preaching. But Prabhupada told him to finish his degree. So Prabhupada, many devotees to finish their studies. I know Virabhava Prabhu and his wife, they were both engineering students. And they didn't work as engineers, but they went ahead and finished that degree. There's a lot of self-discipline skills that are very, very good for your Krishna consciousness. To learn how to be self-disciplined. That's why companies hire college graduates, because they've proven their ability to discipline themselves, to regulate themselves, to get a job, to get something accomplished. You see, so it's good training, how to accomplish something, to have a goal and to accomplish it successfully. You see, the college degree will teach you how to do that, whatever you study. So you should continue with just get your degree. And then after that, we'll see what your career path should be from there. If one is inclined to eventually become married, then you should have some income. Of course, you could always... We'll have to talk... This is a personal matter, not for the Bhagavatam, not for the Sunday feast lecture. But it's a personal thing, but we can talk about it. You and Mataji and myself and you, we can get together and talk about it. That's great. You have these thoughts. That's wonderful. You're detached from these things. That's wonderful. That's the proper mood. I simply want to please Guru and Krishna.
But then I also have some thoughts that tell me to wait. You see, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I have these thoughts that just push me forward, but then I also have some thoughts that are pulling me back. And I'm like struggling.
We'll have a darshan. We'll have a nice darshan about him. Anything else? Yes.
Like some of the relatives, you know, even when we talk to them about Krishna and everything, you know, Krishna consciousness, they don't just get it. Is that due to their past karmas?
Relatives are the, in most cases, the relatives are the toughest people to preach to, because they see you in terms of your material relationship with them. To talk to a stranger, you go out on book distribution or just, you know, to talk to a stranger, you're an authority. It's like we met today a midget in the Cincinnati airport. And he wanted to know what this was in the forehead. He was actually a very nice man, a midget, on his way to Los Angeles. So I gave him a book. He was very interested. Strangers are sometimes much more open, because they don't have some preconceived idea. They see you as an authority, but the family doesn't. They see you as, you know, so and so, cousin or brother or whatever. They can't see you as some authority who can speak on behalf of Krishna or God. They don't. So it's tough. Although sometimes we've seen it's like your parents. You see, sometimes one can. One can make the family members Krishna. I couldn't do it with my family. But what is your actual family? All living entities. So don't be concerned. If you're thinking I have to live in my family, great. Understand, what is your family? Your family is the whole world. So now how can I make the whole world Krishna conscious? That should be your meditation. How can I live my life in such a way, with every thought, word, and deed, that I can actually be elevating the whole global consciousness by my example, by my words, by my actions. You see? Yeah, don't depend. Well, I'm going to see if I'd be a successful preacher or not. I go to my brothers, sisters, cousins, and I fail. Oh, I can't be a good preacher. I couldn't convince them. No, don't think like them. They'll be the last people to be convinced in most cases. If at all, ever convinced. I never convinced any of my family members. Never. But I don't let it slow me down. Now I have so many family members, spiritual family members, you see. So, it depends if they're... To really be able to understand this philosophy, one has to become materially exhausted. That they realize this material nature is not satisfactory. I can't find happiness in this material world. They have to come to that point of material exhaustion, Prabhupada explains, to become actually receptive, to really understand it. As long as they think they can enjoy material life, it's tough, really tough to convince somebody. You see?
I'm actually curious about Srila Prabhupada's own children.
Huh?
Srila Prabhupada.
Prabhupada didn't make any... one of his sons is least favorable to the movement, but actually he never became fully devoted. One son is a little friendly to the movement, but even that, they were fighting in the court, fighting Ajahn Prabhupada. The family members went to court to say, ISKCON is our father's property. We inherited ISKCON. All the assets of ISKCON belong to us because we're the children of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Therefore, ISKCON is our personal property now. In the courts, they fought to take ISKCON as their inheritance. They lost in the courts. But that it shows you, you know, that they weren't properly situated. Prabhupada gave them a stipend. Some allowance. He arranged that before he left the body, that his family members would have some enough to, you know, cover their basic needs. Not some exorbitant thing that inherited the property of ISKCON. No, he took care of them. He made an arrangement before he left his body. One of the last things he did was make an arrangement for his family members to get something. Not the going on and on, but just the immediate family members. Anything else? All right. See about the internet. No more questions from the internet. Okay, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur ki jai. Gaura Premanandi.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.